KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You can also hear the show at KCRW.com. For the past, now coming up on 8 seasons, Doug Ellen has created the Guides of Entourage through the ups and downs of fame and the shifts in power. He joins me here. I'm going to talk about the last season of the show. Doug, thanks so much for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
And that's what the show is about as much as anything else, sort of the shift not only in power in terms of the status in Hollywood, but the way power works in friendships too.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's a hierarchy in groups, and, you know, one of the things that I think made the show relatable, especially to young men, was, you know, everybody grew up with this group. One guy had the better-looking friend, someone had the ugly brother, and not that Kevin Dillon's ugly, I'm just saying, you know, but the not as good-looking brother, and there was the hanger-on friend, and there was the kind of moral compass friend, which is Eric. So the show from the initial base was supposed to be kind of a friendship look, and then put him fish out of water in Hollywood. So,
but and well, you talked a few of the times about this. And like I said, though, I do think that show is about the way power shifts and power dynamics. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering when that sort of seemed like it's like really about the time of the second season that really started to happen in the show.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, you know, I've used so much of what happened to me in my life in this town, and this town is such an up and down town. I've had friends who were complete zero losers who all of a sudden got the role, and a year and a half later, they're multimillionaires being treated like they're kings. So it's an interesting dynamic, especially when you spend a lot of time with a group, as I have, and watch them come up and watch the ebbs and flows and watch the rises and falls, which there have been so many. They really have. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've seen in my group of friends alone where one is on top and everyone's jealous, and then all of a sudden they fall and someone else moves into the spot. So it's really been interesting, but
one of the things I like about the show, too, which you say is basically the adventures of Vincent Chase and his four friends, guys who've grown up together in New York. And you were just saying before we started how New York is key, mm-hmm. not only for the background, but also for the actors.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the way these guys speak, you know, it's how I grew up, and it's guys that I know. And that's why I was so specific when we were casting Entourage to find four New Yorkers. Jeremy, obviously, is from Chicago, and he didn't grow up with the guys. So
But he's an outsider anyway.
He's an outsider of the group. So we looked for 6 months, and as I told you before I got in here, I'm going through the same thing now with the new show that I'm working on. So New York cadence and New York language is very specific, and it's not easy to imitate. Even in the great movies, we've seen non-New Yorkers try to play New York, and often it doesn't work, you know? So,
because you talk about this, I think about that scene in Get Shorty where Danny DeVito is talking to Travolta, and he said, you know, you guys have a certain confidence in the way you talk, and Travolta actually has that in the movie.
Travolta, you know, has it unbelievable, you know? I mean, he absolutely captures what a New Yorker is and that vibe and all of that stuff. So, and him coming out to California in that movie is interesting in a totally different way than obviously what we do, but great movie, and I've seen it probably 200 times, so.
Because I've thought about that before just in the way that, you know, it's almost like he basically changes the gravitational force when he walks into the room.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of way that really in the first couple of seasons, too, you treated Vince.
Yeah.
I mean, he was always really somebody who got an entrance most of the time.
Yeah, and, you know, and there's guys that, you know, Adrian Grenier who plays Vince, who's very, very underrated in my opinion. But from minute one of that first pilot, the second he came on the screen, there was something about him that you actually believed he was a movie star, which the entire show would have fallen if you didn't believe that. And there are guys who just walk in a room and there's just something about them, some intangible, you know, that they have, so.
And that's a tricky piece of casting, too, casting somebody on a TV show who should be a movie star, because so often when you see that, you never believe that.
That was the hardest part of casting the show, and I knew from the beginning if we didn't have a guy who was believable as a movie star, we wouldn't have a show. So that was very tricky, and we were looking for a Mark Wahlberg guy for so long, who was more of an edgy, tough guy, and we couldn't find him. And when we switched to Adrian, it brought a whole different dynamic to the show.
It's the treatment we're talking about, Entourage, with its creator, Doug Ellen. Because the thing is, and I've talked about this with you before too, that the way Adrian plays Vince, he's more like a really sort of like a kind of a macho hippie.
Yeah, I mean, he's so laid back, which Adrian, you know, sort of is in real life and brings that to it. And again, you know, he gets not credited for what he's doing there, but he's so effortless and so smooth, and kind of you feel that he's quietly controlling all of the things around him and the guys around him, but not really making much of an effort.
Because that's an interesting kind of way, too. That's really an exercise of power when somebody's not throwing his weight around and still people gravitate around him anyway.
Right.
Was that something that came up in the... Because you said a number of times you had to do a number of drafts and just addressing that sort of thing. So we got the sense of the power without having it be telegraphed all the time.
I mean, yeah, there were certain things about that. But, you know, I think, again, a lot of that came in casting. And Adrian has an interesting way he moves. He kind of glides through a room, and you know, even in real life, people are just, they're drawn to him. You know, you look at him and you take a look, who is this guy? There's something unique about him. But yes, you know, we definitely played into the writing of not making him too anything. You know, he's kind of just a little bit aloof and a little bit missed, but at the end of the day, when he needs to come through for his guys, he always does.
But part of that, too, is, and a lot of the writing in that first season dealt with that, creating a mystique around him.
I mean, early on especially, and, you know, some of it, so much of it was taken from real stories, but just the idea that he didn't read his scripts, that he cared that little, that was taken from, trust me, big movie stars.
And people used to talk about it. Studio hits, too.
People used to talk about it. They'll go, oh, this show is so unrealistic. The guy doesn't read his scripts. I'm telling you, there are people with $15 million offers on the table who do not read these scripts. Fact, put it down in writing. So we wanted to go with that kind of feeling. And part of it is laziness, but more a bigger part of it is fear and paralysis of reading something and not knowing whether you can actually do it or not, which I think, you know, artists often go through. They have no idea whether they can actually accomplish what they're doing. And, you know, clearly there are some that are more confident than others, but there are a lot that you'd be surprised how insecure they are about the situation.
Well, early in the show, too, there was this real thing that's not so much part of the show now, sort of drawing a line in the sand, is the relationship, too, between Eric, played by Kevin Connolly, and Vince, rather, is just that thing between art and commerce.
Yeah.
I mean, and that was a really important part of it, the very beginning of the show.
Yeah, which is always, I think, for artists, is always kind of a... You walk the line of that, of whether you want to make a lot of money or whether you want to do great art. Obviously, you know, some people, everyone would like to do one or the other. You know, some people can't do either. But when you get into a position, when you are that kind of movie star, if you're a Leo or a Johnny Depp, where you have those opportunities, it's which way do you go? And, you know, I looked at a lot of movie stars' careers, and a lot who held out for a long time before they did their commercial movies. And it's interesting just to look at even, you know, a Robert De Niro, one of the great actors of the last 50 years, who really... His career hit a whole different level when he did Midnight Run, which was a great movie. I don't dismiss it as not art, but it was clearly different than the stuff he was doing, but led to all of the comedies that he now does. And, you know, and Johnny Depp doing Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, so it changes everything and still allows them to do their art, but obviously gives them a huge fortune as well.
But you just use the word fear, and that's kind of been a constant undercurrent in the show too. Mm. It's not really spoken out loud that much, but fear runs through it as well.
Yeah, well, that's you know, that's my entire life, so I put a lot of that in, and this town certainly fosters fear, and you know, where you do go from one second to thinking you're on top of the world to the next minute everybody's trying to tear you down. So it takes a strong constitution, and that's really what I try to show in the show is the ups and downs of it, because that's what it is on a daily basis for everybody. You know, you know, there's big actors every weekend whose movies are opening, and all of a sudden they don't open properly, and their whole career looks differently than it did 2 weeks earlier.
But also that fear too, just in Eric's relationship with the women, and just is he making the right choice by being with these women as compared to staying with the group? And at some point, are you a grown-up and walk away from all that fear as well?
Right, right. Well, it's, you know, guys have the fear of missing out, you know, so, and, you know, the new show that I'm doing now, which is 40, is going to be 40-year-olds who have that fear of missing out, but it doesn't really change, and I see it. I have the same group of friends I've had since I'm literally 5 years old. And I see it with all of them, you know, and it is, as you get older, you want to recapture that youth that you had, you know, and careers come and go, and you have all these responsibilities that happen, but you still always want those moments where you can just hang out with your friends and pretend you're back in high school. So
it's a treatment. We're talking about fear with Doug Allen, the creator of us.
Serious here. I don't know what happened.
Well, I just find that fascinating because it's that thing. It's not just the fear of like losing your standing, but I guess that fear of missing out is sort of that. And to some extent, you're looking back at Kissing a Fool, that sort of that schism between being a man and being a boy mm-hmm. is something that obviously means something to you.
Yeah. Yeah, that keeps coming into everything I do, I guess. I don't know. I got to figure out something different. But.
But the new show you're talking about sounds like that as well. And yeah. I just wonder if there are things that's always been, like, for you, somewhere in your head, an interesting question to keep asking yourself. Because for modern men, it really doesn't change.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. And you know, what I think, you know, will be interesting and different about the new show from this is this show was, at the end of the day, was a wish fulfillment fantasy, you know, and whether it meets those requirements for everybody or not, there were always the idea that this is slightly off reality and this is always just a little fantastical. The new show, though, which is, you know, what I'm dealing with, which is going on with a lot of my friends now, as the world collapsed around us a few years ago and seems to be collapsing right now every day, you know, 45 years ago, in New York, everyone thought they were rich and they were healthy and they were really acting like they were 20-year-olds. And all of a sudden they woke up and reality slapped them in the face. And people are really scared now. And you know, my friends were people who were making money. You know, they had money. They had secure existences.
Because you were going to do a Wall Street show at one point.
Yeah, I was going to do a Wall Street show, which was, you know, thank God it didn't happen when it did. Because literally when we were writing it and Brian Koppelman and David Levine wrote a script. They wrote a great script. But the world literally, I mean, collapsed while this was going on. And to watch excessive hedge fund guys running around owning the world, I think would have been a very difficult swallow when, you know, the Dow was dropping 1,200 points in 2008. So this show is going to deal with more the reality of the aftermath of that and regular guys who, you know, have families and are trying to deal with all that stuff while they're in a recession. So, you know, when reality hits you in the real world and you have 2-3 children and payments to make on your house and your cars and this and that, it's not so much fun. So, you know, the show will definitely have more dramatic elements, but hopefully still be light and some fun, you know.
Okay. It sounds like comedy when you describe it.
You know, I mean, listen, it's going to be dramatic, but the tone is going to be a diner tone, which...
which is another touchstone movie for you, obviously.
Yeah.
Just guys talking.
Yeah. Which is what it is, which is what I always loved, which is just guys hanging out and talking and guys you want to hang out with and be with and dealing with their relationships and all that stuff.
I got to figure on that level, too. Spike Lee's kind of an influence for me because his best movies are that. I mean, in a lot of ways, I'm reminded in some ways of The 25th Hour, just the way those guys talk when I watch Entourage.
Absolutely, yeah. I love 25th Hour and love Spike. I was with Spike yesterday because we're working on something together that we're hoping to shoot in October also. So, but I came up with this idea with Mike Tyson to do kind of a loose look at his life, fictionalized, set in 2012. And John Ridley, I found, who wrote an amazing script, and Spike set to direct it. So,
wow.
Yeah.
I mean, what would be the Mike Tyson of his early career? Or
he's going to start as an 18-year-old Mike Tyson. But again, it's not Tyson, just like Vince wasn't Mark Wahlberg. But elements of his life, Mike is such a compelling, interesting guy. But we didn't want to go do a period piece and didn't want to do a biography. But we just thought, you know, Newark in 2012 is an interesting place, one of the most violent cities in the country. And to try to have young men trying to find their way out of that situation, and boxing will, of course, be a large element of it. But still, we're going to, you know, hopefully find, you know, the hopes and dreams of some people in that place. And Spike's really excited about it, so I'm looking forward to it.
We're going to take a break and lighten up. My guest is Doug Allen. He's the creator of Entourage. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment. There's more to come.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. My guest is Entourage creator Doug Ellen. Here's one of the things I've often wanted to ask you about, and I wonder if people bring this up, but it strikes me that the thing I really like about the show, that instead of showing sex, you have the guys talking about sex mm-hmm. all the time, which really lends itself to a lot of comedy.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that was always the idea from the beginning. It's branched out more than it was, but it was always supposed to be not the girls, but about the guys and how they felt about the girls. And, you know, there has not been a lot of sex on this show. There certainly hasn't been too much gratuitous stuff. Some people even call it a little tame for it. But what I was interested in hearing what the guys thought in the aftermath and how they went about talking about it. So,
which is that thing from those movies you were talking about that have influenced you. Mm-hmm. The fact the guys are talking and they get to represent themselves and get shut down by each other.
Right, right. It's more interesting to me than watching, you know, watching simulated sex. So, you know, it's... so we did that, and I had, you know, some great guys to play out that comedy over the years. So,
because I just thought too that also is the thing, because these guys are always trying to measure themselves against Vince anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So that becomes a way they're trying to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, and it's funny because the show at certain points was criticized for being misogynistic or this or that. But you know, if you watch it, you know, Vince and Eric, who actually got the girls on the show, and certainly early on, they never disrespected women. They never spoke badly about women ever. Drama and Turtle, who were the losers, certainly when we started, they've both come around in some ways. They were the ones who made the comments, which, you know, when it's coming from the guy who can't get girls, you get that there's a whole undercurrent of bitterness rather than misogyny. So,
but one of the things too, you're talking about the women, is that the women are basically almost are often there to sort of tell these guys to grow up.
Yep.
Which is where the comedy comes from too.
Yeah, I mean, Ari's wife certainly, and you know, let's face it, they're four guys who are still basically living together at their, you know, as they're hitting 30, and they like it, you know, and it's a strange thing that's not necessarily common to outside, you know, the entertainment and the sports world, but it is very common in those worlds. And, you know, it's been such a great thing that the entertainment community and the sports world has embraced the show so much because they know how true it is to how they're living. So,
well, that's the thing too, and I wonder about that when you first reached out to a sports celebrity, if they were kind of like, well, yeah, I want to do this because this is just like my life.
The sports celebrities started reaching out to me, I mean, early on, way before, you know, actors did. They got it quickly, and I've gotten a chance to meet, you know, some of my sports heroes because of the show. I've yet to come into the athlete that doesn't, you know, watch the show, you know, with his guys, you know, on the team and talk about, you know, who they are. I mean, LeBron James introduced me to his boys. This is my E, this is my drama, this is my turtle. So it's been a wild ride with that.
I just find myself thinking that because finally what those worlds both do is guys are so insulated, they can mm-hmm. still be adolescents forever.
Yep. Yep. And we're going to do that. Not that it's going to be similar, but, you know, this thing with Spike is going to have elements of that, you know, and have a boxer and his crew. It's going to be much more dramatic and much more edgy and hard-hitting, but it's going to have those elements in it, so...
It's the treatment we're talking about, edgy, with the creative entourage, Doug Ellen. Why did you decide to do this movie now, the one you're, this one you're going to do with Spike? You've been working on it for a while?
Oh, this is a TV show.
TV show,
yeah. This is for HBO. Yeah, we're supposed to shoot the pilot in October. Tyson was on the show, and we just hit it off together, and he was like, you know, why don't you do something like with my life, like kind of like what you did with Mark's life? And we just started talking, and he's got such incredible stories. He's been through so many things, and he's really a compelling guy to listen to. So I thought of this idea, and Jim Lefkowitz, who's my partner, we went out and found John Ridley, and John wrote this amazing script, and John's friends with Spike, and Spike loved the script, so... That's kind of how it happened.
Do you like TV more than doing features? I mean, is it a more gratifying world to you?
I don't know what's gratifying anymore, Elvis. I don't know. It's
asking you this. Are you not gratified by
yourself? I don't have a lot of gratification going on, but I don't really have a preference. I made two movies that were both independent movies, and I made them the same way I make Entourage. I was fortunate enough to be kind of in charge. The people who put me in kind of let me do what I do. So there's not much difference. The stability of it was always a nice thing, you know, to know that you got a job the next day, and then to know that if you screw something up, you might have a chance to fix it in the next episode or something. So I don't really have a preference. They both have similarities to me the way I've done them. And been fortunate enough to be at HBO, where they are give you a lot of creative freedom as long as they're happy with what you're doing.
See, that sounds like gratification to me. Yeah. That sounds a little bit like happy.
Working with HBO has been really pretty amazing, you know.
Well, I guess I should ask you this since it just came up, I guess, the TCAs recently. Is the movie, the Entourage movie, look like it's going ahead now?
Yeah, that's the plan. That's the plan. So I'm going to meet with HBO next week to talk about it. I got to write the script. I mean, that's really what it's hinging on. So I got to get back in that mindset of what is this movie and what are we going to do?
Speaking about sort of the shift from dark to light, just thinking about in the pilot how it was really like bottle service, you know, champagne bottles popping, stuff everywhere. And then the first episode of this season is almost sort of like the Eugene O'Neill version of the Entourage party.
I mean, you know, it's funny because people, you know, go, oh, it's less funny than it was, this and that. You know what? I don't even know anymore.
I thought that was funny. If you look at the pilot and you look at this, like, oh, my God, this is hilarious.
Right, this is where they've come from, you know? I mean, it's – I don't look back, so, you know. I don't really look back. So when people talk about how it's changed or it's this or it's that, I don't really spend a lot of time dwelling on it or thinking about it. But to me, all the show is about four guys who are from New York and they live in L.A. And whatever's happening to them, to me, they're always funny. Kevin Dillon throwing a dry party to me is funny. So, you know, one of the interesting things, you know, criticisms I've heard is that Vince's addiction from last year came so fast. And he didn't have an addiction. He had a bad couple of weeks, which I've had friends go on a bad couple of week run when they've had girlfriend problems and they did a couple of drugs. It wasn't an addiction, but when you're a movie star and you get arrested, you know, it becomes a much bigger situation. And when your friends all live off of you, they have to kind of make sure you survive. So, you know, this was never a thing about, oh, this is about addiction. This is just simply a slice of this guy's life and what happened in a couple of weeks. You know, the seasons of the show usually take place in real time. The season is almost 8 days. So obviously you can't grow a convincing drug addiction, but you can take a guy who's like, oh, I met a crazy girl, I had a car accident, and I got some weird stuff in my head, and I'm gonna do some blow, I'm gonna go out with a porn star, and I'm gonna act a little crazy, and that's all that happens. So
even at that party in the first episode of the season, he's just telling me about, I'm okay.
Right.
It's just a speed bump.
Yeah. It's just a bunch of, you know, it's a bunch of his friends overreacting to it. It's a bunch of neurotic guys who have everything to lose. And the guy that really is at the center of it going, oh, what the hell is wrong with you guys? You know, I'm fine. So,
well, we're fine here too. It's a treatment. My guest is Doug Allen. He's the creator of Entourage, which now has his eighth and final season on HBO. I mean, at one point we were talking, you said, I could do this show forever. You're having such a good time doing it.
Yeah.
What's it like now that that's winding down?
I mean, it's, you know, it's depressing. I mean, it's, and not to say that it's been extremely difficult to keep stories going, you know. I mean, it just is, because, you know, one of the inherent problems with the show is what are the stakes? What is the worst thing that can happen? You know what I mean? So that's always been an issue, but these guys are like my closest friends and the people I work with are like family. So, again, for me, you know, it's been a good stable force for me for the last 8 years, coming from, you know, doing a feature. If it doesn't do well, you sell a script, it sits on a shelf for 12 months. So this was a good run for how I like to live my life. You know, I was in LA with my family, and so it's going to be an interesting challenge coming up.
One of the things I always wondered is that every season the show kind of starts with a crisis point. I mean, sometimes the stakes are much higher than another season, but there's always this kind of flash point.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wondered that was something you used to motivate yourself, to basically put the fire under you and under the guys.
I mean, every season, because I'm crazy and neurotic, every season ends, I'm like, oh, that should have been the last season. That was great. That was a great ending. We should have been done. It would have been over, and it was great.
When did you first think that?
Season two? I'm like, really? Where else am I going to go? You know, where else am I going to go? Season two, when they were walking away to go to Aquaman, you know, I'm like, okay, so, all right, what am I going to do now? It's a big hit and this and that. And then we came back in season three, did one of my favorite episodes where the movie opens up and, you know, and breaks box office records. And, you know, we went. But every season, I'm like, what the hell else am I going to do with this show, you know? And, it had to go darker. It just had to. There was no way these guys could sit around and run around and have sex, smoke pot, go home. I mean, it just, you can't, there's nothing I could write. I mean, so if anyone wants to see that, they should just watch the same stuff over. But I often thought, every year from season two on, I was like, well, I'm out of stuff. That's it. It's done. And the way I've always approached it is okay, how did it end? And where do we move forward from there? Just in a realistic manner. What would be the next big milestone? He went off to do a movie. What's the next big thing? The movie's opening. So And I've gone like that every year. So,
well, part of it, there are two things that come to mind as we talk about this. One is that you always, and I know you get this, recognize the absurdity of drama of doing a show about this thing where it's a bunch of white guys who basically get everything they want.
Yeah.
And that's not the grounds for comedy. I don't know what it is,
right.
Kind of.
Right.
But also the fact that, you know, in this world where everybody is so ultra competitive, mm-hmm. that does become a stake, and finally it's got to be about the chemistry of the guys and the advantage of doing TV. You
right.
have to sort of get people to like and get to know these guys.
Right. Yeah, well, that's why I think especially type A guys love Entourage. The powers of guys at Wall Street and guys, athletes and successful guys that I meet, they always say, you know, this is one of the few shows I watch because it is a type A personality show. It is aggressively male. And it's dealing with different stakes that a lot of people necessarily can't relate to, which is, you know what, I am well off, I am doing well, but I still feel insecurities and stresses that someone who's making, you know, can't make their house payments at all, can't relate to, but are very real to them. And when you get yourself in a world where your expenses go up here, you know, again, most people go, who cares? So just remove your expenses. But you know, when you get into a lifestyle, no matter who the guys are, the athletes who came from nothing, when they start building themselves up and it all starts going away, people don't know how to deal with it. So those were the kind of anxieties I wanted to deal with. So,
because really, that's finally what I think the show is about. You always say friendship, but I've said this to you before. I think the show is always about people testing themselves,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's
yeah.
the thing you're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, there is definitely a lot of that and elements of, you know, where can I go? We see it in, you know, especially as the show's evolved in Turtle, trying to really break. If you told me that Turtle 8 years ago, who was going to a girl, make out with me and I'll show you where Vince eats breakfast, to now, you know, starting tequila companies with Mark Cuban and trying to open restaurants and doing and having beautiful girlfriends, Jamie Lynn Sigler, et cetera, et cetera. You know, they've really evolved. But I've watched some of the crews in Los Angeles of movie stars really evolve too, from being a bunch of hanger-ons to actually serving purposes, to actually going off and doing their own thing. So,
see, that's all the thing I sort of thought would be coming next. At some point, these guys, with the exception of Johnny Drama a little bit, are all kind of growing up. And
mm-hmm.
that moment you're talking about, where Turtle makes the deal with Mark Cuban,
mm-hmm.
you go, well, this is a man now. He
yeah.
even looks like a man.
Yep. Jerry
Ferraro, yeah.
has physically evolved so much too, which is amazing. And has evolved as an actor. I mean, he was 24 years old when we cast him. And, you know, there's certain rolling the dice. We thought he was amazing and raw, but I don't know that I could have imagined that he would evolve the way he has.
Well, are you happy now?
Am I happy in life?
No, we'll get to that the next time you come by. Let's just say you're happy with the way the show has turned out, the way it's this last season.
I'm very happy with it. I think, you know, I think maybe it'll be, you know, too dramatic for some. But yeah, I'm very happy with it. I think all the characters are showing different sides that we haven't seen, which I think is what is interesting about Entourage. We've managed to do extremely broad comedy and extremely real drama. All at the same time, and in 30 minutes with five actors going. So, yeah, I love the ending. I feel really good about it. So,
well, now there's an up note to end on.
Yep.
Doug,
Thank
thanks
you.
So much for doing this.
Absolutely. Thanks, Elvis.
My guest is Doug Ellen. He's the creator and executive producer of Entourage. Our recording engineer, mixer, and editor is J.C. Swadek. I'm just Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.